Check podcasts.
The Center for Ocean Applied Sustainable Technologies, or COAST, welcomes you to COAST Talks, showcasing the people, ideas, businesses, and communities driving innovation in Pacific Canada's sustainable blue economy. Brought to you by the South Island Prosperity Partnership.
Welcome to the COAST Talks podcast, a deep dive into the innovations driving BC's blue economy. My name is Sophie Silks, and I'm the Director of Strategic Engagement at COAST, the Center for Ocean Applied Sustainable Technologies. COAST is Pacific Canada's hub for the sustainable blue economy. We support ocean entrepreneurs in British Columbia through new venture support, access to facilities and equipment, training and workforce development, and ecosystem connection. This August, we launched the COAST Membership Program, which is the central conduit for all of our offerings. Benefits are wide-ranging and include access to our network of ocean innovation hubs, joining our digital communities, event tickets, special project opportunities, and access to our new Blue Pathways learning and workforce development platform. You can learn more about COAST and our programs at canadacoast.ca/join. On today's episode of the COAST Talks podcast, we are delighted to welcome Andrew Polanyi, co-founder and executive director at OceanAid, a company using sonar and AI technology to protect marine environments. We'll explore how they're tackling ocean challenges like ghost gear detection and others, and discuss their vision for the future. Welcome, Andrew. We're thrilled to have you.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Sophie. Yeah, it's great to be here.
Wonderful. You and I met in April at the COAST and ABCMI Innovation Forum, and I've been looking forward to sitting down with you ever since to have a conversation about OceanAid and what you're up to. So perhaps you can start us off by introducing yourself and telling us a bit about what OceanAid does.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, thanks for the introduction. A bit about OceanAid. We're a B2B ocean tech company based here out of beautiful Victoria, and we're working to empower marine decision making with real-time object detection. And it's really our mission to give our customers the best insights from their sonar and video data to make informed decisions for cleaner, healthier, and safer oceans. And I guess a bit about what inspired me. Well, I'll start with a story a bit about myself. Well, I grew up in the city of Toronto. And I always wanted to be an entrepreneur. I started my first company when I was 16.
Wow.
In the summer, selling juice at local farmers markets.
What kind of juice?
It was freshly squeezed juice from a juicer.
Wow.
Called Juice Junkies.
Wow.
And yeah, we juiced it in front of them. But and also, ever since I was five, I would fly out to Vancouver Island to go fishing with my grandparents. And each summer, we'd come out for 2 weeks and go up island to Port McNeil with my grandfather, his boat, and his camper van. And we'd camp up there and go fishing each morning at 5 a.m. So waking up in the fog, going out on the water, seeing countless amounts of marine life, whales, caught countless amounts of fish, and really fell in love with the ocean being out there. It was my favorite time of the summer. And to this day, I still love being on the boat and experiencing the ocean like that. So that's definitely one of my inspirations through my grandfather, who taught me pretty much everything I know about fishing and the ocean. And also, that's the reason why I moved out here to Vancouver Island to study software engineering at UVic, where I met my co-founder, Archit Kumar. And together, when we were graduating, we had the opportunity to participate in an ocean startup project community climate challenge, where we came up with the idea behind OceanAid of mapping. It started as mapping underwater plastics with sonar and AI. And through that program and the customer discovery, we really refined and created this company through that. So that's a bit about what inspired me and why I'm here today.
That's so impressive. I can really visualize those mornings in Port McNeil with your grandfather. That sounds very impactful. Let's start with kind of the basics about the applications of OceanAid's technology. You mentioned a couple things in there. We heard sonar, AI, plastic detection. Tell us a little bit about the focus there.
Yeah, totally. I guess to continue that story of mapping plastic with sonar and AI, we found that there's a big problem in general that because the ocean is just so massive, it's really time-consuming and costly to monitor underwater objects like plastic, and specifically a type of plastic that we focused on in the beginning, which is called ghost fishing gear, which is lost nets, traps, and ropes from the fishing industry, which I'm sure we'll get into today. But it's a real challenge for these marine missions that rely on that real-time detection of objects and essentially create efficient marine missions that can kind of collect as much debris as possible. And at OceanAid, we're trying to kind of use this latest AI technology and enhance these sonars and different marine data to support sustainable ocean ecosystems. And I guess the sustainable development goals of specifically the Sustainable Development Goal 14, which is conserving the ocean and developing sustainable ocean organizations through that. So, yeah, essentially, if you think about it, we're trying to make invisible objects visible so they can be better managed, because you can't manage what you can't see. Mm. And I'm not sure if I went into everything of that question there. I know there's a lot of applications for this technology, but
yeah,
maybe we could get to that.
Yeah. I have a question about before OceanAid, or in lieu of OceanAid, how are people finding this gear without the technology that you have? It clearly meets such an important need. So I'm curious about what the status quo was when you kind of arrived on the scene.
Yeah, totally. So they're using divers and ROVs to kind of go out and locate this gear,
wow,
which can cover a limited range. Mm-hmm. But also they're using a type of sonar called side scan sonar, mm-hmm, which you go out and it's attached to a boat or a autonomous vehicle to go out and scan the bottoms of the ocean to essentially locate this gear. The thing is, you need an expert to interpret this data, mm-hmm, and that often means you have to go back to shore to the office and go through long, it takes a long time to go through all the data, and by the time you go back, the tides or a storm could have picked that debris up and it could have changed locations.
Right.
So there's a need for real-time detection, and essentially what we're bringing to the table is a system that you can detect. You can classify what's down there, and you can create these high priority areas where there's the most gear and the best conditions of retrieval, so you can kind of optimize your marine missions. And we started with ghost gear because we found through that customer discovery process that more than 70% of macro plastic in the ocean is ghost fishing gear. And I'll hit you with some cold ocean facts,
yes,
if you don't mind. 70% of macro plastic in the ocean's ghost fishing gear. It kills 5 to 30% of harvestable fish globally.
Wow.
This gear isn't just floating on the surface, but it's estimated more than 90% of it's actually in the water column or on the sea floor. Mm. So this gear essentially breaks down as well into microflat plastics and enters our food chain. So it's by far the deadliest form of ocean plastic. And just to give the audience an idea of how this kind of continuously fishes, if you imagine a crab trap, for example, on the seafloor, and it's broken off from the buoy, so it's currently a derelict crab trap that crabs are entering. They have no way of escaping, and they kind of fight in that trap in like almost a gladiator-type coliseum, until they essentially die and their remains attract more crabs to enter that trap. And it's a continuous process until it's retrieved or until it breaks down.
Wow.
And this is the same for ghost nets and different ropes that continuously kill fish and also other marine life like whales. So
yeah,
it's a huge global problem, and there's in need of regulations and funding to help this problem. So in 2023, when we were designing our Ghost Gear model, we had to, we were kind of banking on the Ghost Gear Fund of Canada being renewed. And we unfortunately, it wasn't renewed. And we found that we were kind of relying on grants, which isn't sustainable as a business. So that's when we started a new form of customer discovery, second round, and tried to scale this technology into many other applications like derelict vessels, so detecting for underwater sunken ships and planes, but also what we're latestly developing is monitoring for fish and marine life with sonar and having that automatic detection. So lots of exciting opportunities for both all these applications. So yeah.
Wow. Fascinating. 70%. I had no idea.
Yeah. A lot.
Yeah, absolutely. And that gladiator picture sure is an important visual. Well, maybe I'll combine two questions that I have for you. One is just, I'd love if you helped us envision like what a day looks like for a customer who is using your technology. And maybe you can use an example of one of the new areas that you've gotten into since kind of deviating a little bit from Ghost Gear. I'm just thinking about like, help us, you're a great storyteller, help us paint the picture of like, how does this actually work when you're out there trying to relieve some gear from the ocean?
Yeah, that's a great, great question. And I guess I have to explain a bit about what the technology is first.
Yes,
and
please.
How our customers are using it. So essentially, we've developed an ATR system, which is automatic target recognition system that pairs with your sonar on your boat, whether it's a side scan or multi-beam sonar. And we have this real-time proprietary signal processing, which takes in that live sonar data and puts it through a deep neural network that's trained on thousands and thousands of images of ghost gear, of derelict vessels, for example, so that it can detect, classify, and map those locations out in real time while you're out there on the boat. So essentially, if one of our customers on the ghost gear side of things was out there on the water with their side scan sonar, they would be getting real-time detections and an interactive map where they can visualize those detections, visualize the high priority areas so that they can go out that same day and do those retrievals. So depending on other applications, so we call this sonar ATR system Marlin ATR. So that's kind of our name for it.
Nice.
Because we've also been working with First Nations and ocean restoration companies on other applications, such as detecting shoreline debris so that they can also improve their beach cleanups. And really excited to have just completed our first major contract with the First Nation, doing over 100 kilometers of coastline with our Eagle ATR model. So that's what we call our kind of ATR system that connects to aerial video. So
oh, wow.
It's a similar approach where they go out with a drone and scan the coastline and not only collect vast amounts of data about what's out there, but also be able to target those priority beaches where there's the most debris so that they can go out and do efficient beach cleanups. So if you think about our customer, they get that real-time insights while they're out there doing their missions. And that's kind of where we bring value to.
Yeah, it seems that that immediacy of being able to detect something and then not have to, you know, come out another day and, as you say, miss the opportunity maybe to actually resolve something, that seems really important. I'd love to talk a little more, since you bring up your collaboration with Indigenous partners. Can you share more about OceanAid's approach to partnership? If you've got other partners that you'd like to talk about and other examples of some interesting collaborations.
Yeah, totally. Really believe that collaboration is key for a successful blue economy, but also a sustainable blue economy into the future. And it's really been at the forefront of OceanAid since the start, working with different ocean restoration organizations, such as Ocean Legacy Foundation, who I probably don't need to introduce. They're a massive cross Canada organization and a leader in plastic retrieval and recycling, but also have many others, both on the East Coast, like Coastal Action, also several sonar companies who we've been working with, like Imagenics, and surveying companies like CSR Geosurveys, government organizations like the DFO and Environment Canada. So, and of course, First Nations. And I really believe that it's really important to work with and learn from First Nations, who's been doing this sort of ocean restoration work for hundreds of generations. And we're really blessed to have the ability to work with many First Nations, like Bear River First Nation, and more recently, Lac Walaam's First Nation, where we did that large cleanup with.
Yeah. So,
I guess all these collaborations have really shaped the decisions we make and where mm-hmm. we are as a company today. So we're very grateful and look forward to future collaborations and partners to come.
I love it. Yeah. Well, it's such an interconnected sector. It makes a lot of sense that collaboration's at the core. And I think that helps kind of explain how you've been able to evolve too and really shift your focus as things change in the funding landscape, which you alluded to at the outset.
Yeah. And thank you to Coast as well for all the mixers that you guys have had and really amazing networking opportunities through Coast. And shout out Coast.
Thank you. Yeah. It's been amazing to kind of see these connections seeded at events like that. And I'm glad they've been useful. I'll shift gears a little bit to talk about challenges. You've mentioned a couple changes in direction. Of course, I'm sure we can drill down into the Ghost Gear Fund and some other barriers that you face. But are there particular challenges that come to mind as being the most maybe formative for you all as you've progressed?
Yeah, startups are filled with challenges, as many founders know, from funding, from technical challenges, from all sorts of, I guess, securing your first contract, grants not going the way you thought they would. Not sure where to start, but there, for example, as I mentioned, we were kind of relying or banking on the Ghost Gear Fund and working with customers who rely on this funding from the Government of Canada to, in 2024, to essentially get this technology out into the hands of a lot of customers. And one challenge was that since we weren't in the grants, written into the grants at the start, people and customers would say, oh, when the next round of funding comes along, we'll include you then. But since that next round of funding didn't come along, then we realized, yeah, it's going to be a challenge to kind of rely on grants. Right. And that's why we kind of shifted into relying on customers that have a need. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of one of the big challenges. Also funding, we have been bootstrapped 100%. So me and my co-founder Archie have been funding this ourselves and putting our own time in. And we really didn't want to take outside investment until we were confident in kind of our traction and, mm-hmm. and the impact we have. So, which we've had more recently. So we are looking to do a family funding and an angel round this October, but having that lack of funding and just the grind involved with that was really challenging and
totally
really made us who we are today.
Yeah, there you go. Well, again, I think your ability to shift gears is really enabled by that choice.
Yeah.
Coast listeners, take note. Family and Friends Round coming up October.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Was that a secret?
If you want to get in at the sea level of an impactful, groundbreaking startup, send me an email.
There you go. Nice plug. Love it. Well, I'd love to talk more about some success stories as we're talking about encouraging all your wave of new investors to jump aboard.
Yeah.
You have some case studies that are particularly close to your heart or really feel like, again, they've shaped you along the way?
Yeah, totally. I think one big case study and pilot project was with Bear River First Nation, where we detected over 1,000 traps in and around Nova Scotia area.
Wow.
There and in a small area. And that was really the first time seeing just the extent of the problem of ghost gear, and motivated me and our team to really push forward with that.
Yeah.
But as for a success story, I would definitely want to bring up our most recent contract and how thrilled we are to have kind of a great relationship with Lac Qualams Fisheries and the First Nation up there, and for them to welcome us on their traditional territory to do a project and believe in us. So
yeah.
It's crazy how we got that contract too, in a way that it started by just cold calling.
Mm.
And we were stuck about, this was last year, we had no contract and no real customer at the time. Ghost gear was not being renewed for funding in Canada. And we're at the point where we just had to try something new. So I started cold calling First Nations around BC.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we first got in contact with Lac Qualams.
Wow.
And through that, we would meet with Lac Qualams and essentially talk about funding opportunities. And this Clean Coast, Clean Waters funding opportunity came around, and we jumped at the opportunity to work with them alongside and partner on a revolutionary idea of mapping, detecting, and retrieving with AI. And from there, we ended up going up there, mapping over 100 kilometers of coastline and
wow.
Helping increase the efficiency of that contract, and really excited about upcoming projects with them as well. So that was a huge success story, and thought
Love
I'd
it.
Share that.
Oh, that's fantastic. Again, I'm really struck by how deeply collaboration is woven into your learnings and successes and progress along the way. That's wonderful. I want to move into kind of a little sneak peek of what you're doing next. But before I do that, I'm curious about, I mean, this is such an interesting field, and I feel like we're really seeing new technologies and companies popping up at this intersection between conservation and AI. I'm curious about what you're looking at and seeing in terms of trends, and whether there are other companies that are kind of like North Stars or inspiring to you, any shout outs. It's always, I know our listeners are all kind of about this space. So I'm sure they'd love to know where else to go to see what you're seeing that's inspiring to you.
Yeah, there's so much innovation happening in the blue economy right now. It's really inspiring. To see even just here in Victoria, the companies that are revolutionizing the kind of blue economy with Barnacle, Brandon there, he's doing amazing work.
Mm-hmm.
Marine Labs, Open Ocean Robotics are just a few names that are really propelling this in Victoria, the blue economy forward for sure. So
yeah.
What I'm seeing is that there's a lot of opportunity in the AI space. There's so much data in the ocean from these sensors, and I think AI is being implemented more and more to extract meaningful insights from that data and essentially enhance these kind of legacy systems that have been there for generations to improve efficiency and really get the most out of these systems. So that's why I think OceanAid is kind of perfectly positioned to be a leader in that field of AI and bringing efficiency to marine missions. So
love it.
Yeah.
How amazing to have so many inspiring examples right here in Victoria.
It's incredible.
That's awesome. Well, I want to, again, kind of touch on what you're up to next and also give you an opportunity to share anything else about your technology that you think our audiences would like to hear, and then to hear about the future, what's on the horizon.
Awesome. Yeah. So a bit about what's next. So during our second customer discovery round, we found tons of applications for this technology, with monitoring aquaculture, collision avoidance for deadhead logs, mine detection. There's opportunities in defense, and several others. We tried to choose the application that had the biggest market here in BC, but also had kind of our mission, which is creating cleaner, healthier, and safer ocean ecosystems. And what's next is we're actually developing a fishing and marine life monitoring system. And
Nice. We
are essentially putting this system on recreational and commercial fisheries boats, but also in rivers and different areas to count and monitor the behavior of fish, specifically salmon. So our next pilot project, we're working with Lac Qualam's First Nation again, who have a fish trap up on the Skeena River, and we're going to be implementing a kind of salmon monitoring system to enhance their fishing efficiency of their trap, but also monitor the salmon going up and down the Skeena River. And from there, we look to kind of get this technology out onto boats to improve the efficiency, reduce bycatch, reduce the costs by allowing fisheries to meet their quota faster, and so forth. And I guess a bit about our technology, how you get it. Well, we're starting kind of to roll out our early access here, and you can implement, or I guess connect with our ATR system three ways, really. One is through API, if you have internet access in those areas. And if you don't have internet access, you can download our licensed application onto your laptop, connect it to the sonar with Ethernet, and get those live detections. And then lastly, I forgot we were on video today. I wanted to bring my box, but we have these Marlin series boxes, which are hardware that we've been prototyping and building that are built off NVIDIA's latest AI chips and are optimized for our system. So it kind of runs in that split second delay from the sonar data or the aerial video data. So
cool.
If you want to learn more about those systems and how they can kind of relate to your applications, just reach out to me, contact@oceanaid.ca. We'll plug there. But we also have the ability to scale this into the applications of our customers. So if you have a detection that's needed that we don't have right now, we can very easily scale that, as we have a standard operating procedure, and we've done that with many other times. So it's quickly scalable to the needs of our customers.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Sounds like we'll have to do a video call next time so you can see that. That's fantastic.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I could talk to you for hours. This is so fascinating. I would love to give you the opportunity, as we kind of reach close here, to share any advice that you have for other innovators in the field, and then also for funders and supporters of innovations like OceanAid.
Yeah, that's a great question. And definitely, if you have an ocean idea, I'd say go for it. There's no better time here in BC, but here in Canada as well. If you have an idea, reach out to amazing programs like Ocean Startup Project and Coast, and they provide a lot of guidance. They provide you with the networking you need to kind of make those first connections and go from there. Other than that, definitely want to say thank you to everyone who's helped me in our journey, to my co-founder Archie, who we've been working together for many years on problem solving it's been great working with him, to my parents who've been supportive throughout this journey, and everyone else who's kind of guided me and given me mentorship. So thank you so much, and big things coming soon.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Andrew. We're so excited to stay tuned about OceanAid. I think it sounds like you've got some fascinating projects in the pipeline. So appreciate you taking some time to share your story and really inspire us with all the collaboration that has made what you do so incredible. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Sophie.
Yeah.